Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Alan Levy Show at blogtalkradio.com. Be prepared to call in now and chat with Alan and his very special guest right here at blogtalkradio.com. With no more further ado, please welcome your host, Mr. Alan Levy.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Alan Levy Show, airing live on blogtalkradio.com. It's a pleasure to be here today. Joining you on this beautiful Wednesday morning in northern New Jersey. The archive of this show can be found at blogtalkradio.com/Alan Levy, or actually on iTunes if you search my name, Alan Levy. So please check it out, and glad you're listening live to the broadcast. And if you'd like to call in to today's show with a question, feel free to do so by dialing 347-677-0649. That's 347-677-0649. So if you call in during this next hour, during the broadcast, we'll be able to take your questions for our very special guest, who is Doug Ellen. And Doug Ellen, if those that don't know, is the creator of Entourage, and he's a guest on my show today. Very excited to have Doug here. And for those of you that don't know, and I mean the few of you that don't know, we're unaware of Entourage, but it's a hugely popular show on HBO. It's entering its fourth season this coming Sunday night, June 17th. Look for it on HBO, and really excited to have Doug here today on my show. How are you, Doug?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Good. My pleasure. So you're in New York doing the whole circuit and a lot of PR activities going on?
Yep, I'm doing the whole thing. I'm going to do a whole serious radio thing tomorrow, possibly doing Charlie Rose on Friday, and we've got our fourth season premiere tomorrow night. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's exciting. Now, before we get into the interview, I had to come up with some full disclosure, because you know the phrase, I knew you when?
Yep.
Okay. So this, does it apply to here?
Yes, it absolutely does.
I don't even know if it applies. Maybe I knew you before when.
Yeah, I know you probably since I'm born. Probably.
Right. Exactly. I was telling somebody that I knew the last time I saw you, it was Dougie.
Yep. I mean, I probably haven't seen you in 10 years, but I mean, we basically grew up together, or I grew up.
Yeah.
You're a couple years older than me, so.
Yeah, just a couple. So anyway, I wanted to congratulate you as well on the profile in the New York Times Magazine. How did that come about?
They just called me and said they want to do it, and of course that was a big thrill, and, it's a good thing to get into, good for get some exposure for the show, so.
Well, it's excellent. It was quite something to see you up there on that show. So I'm sure it was real exciting.
Yeah.
What I wanted to do, I know we want to talk about season four, but I thought maybe we could learn a little more about you and where you grow up, what were some of your influences and so on. So maybe we could talk a little about that. Of course, knowing you for my whole life and your whole life, yes. Knew that you grew up in Merrick, Long Island. Is that right?
Yep, Merrick, Long Island, south shore of Long Island, a nice middle-class town, and kind of a lot of the influences, for the show are from that, how I grew up. And there, the show is kind of a compilation of me and my friends and kind of Mark Wahlberg and his friends. They kind of mix and match a bunch of traits from all of them, so.
Well, America is not exactly the hotbed of budding Hollywood talent.
Yeah, no, well, although we do have Amy Fisher, so
right.
We've got some good things from America.
Yes, that's true. Amy Fisher lives very close to you, and that's true. That's very funny. And of course, Seinfeld's from Massapequa. I mean, there's some talent that grew up in Long Island,
yeah.
Right?
Judd Apatow's from Long Island, who's now the hottest guy in town, or not in our town, but in Hollywood, with Knocked Up coming out.
Right.
Long Island's got, we've had some good people come out of here, so.
I think a lot of people identify with the personalities there, and I know that, a lot of the characters that a lot of your friends from high school are referenced in the show. Is that right? And family, and
yeah.
So a lot. You've got a lot of real world influences in your show.
Yeah, I mean the show is sort of the characters. The main four characters come from me and three of my best friends that I know since I'm 6 or 7 years old, and all of their names at some point have appeared in the show, either as an agent or as a friend of the guys or whatever it is. So I take a lot of stories that happened in my childhood and even after, and I put them into the show. So.
And I think, do you think that's one of the reasons why it's so successful? Because people can identify with it?
I think at the end of the day, I mean, when I talk to, you know, young people about the show, they say that's me and my friends in high school, and that's what the show's attempt is, you know. It's trying to be about friendship more than it is about Hollywood, and I think that's why it's working for people. They just go, that could be me. If me and my friends moved out to Hollywood, that's what we would do.
Right. I mean, really, Seinfeld, too. I mean, all about their friendship and how they existed with one another, and while their personalities were a bit off, people identify with these people. I think people are identifying with the characters in Entourage.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping. So, you know, and it's going well so far.
Did you always want to be in the entertainment field? I mean, when did this start? You know,
I mean, I always did, but I really never did anything about it. I kind of grew up, my father's an accountant, and we were so far removed from it. But ever since I was a kid, I was always kind of performing and doing this. And then the day I graduated college, I moved to L.A. I started doing stand-up comedy. And I started directing some short films, and that's how it went. But I probably should have gotten started earlier. But it kind of was one of those things that didn't seem like a realistic goal.
Right.
And then when I realized, wow, what am I doing with my life? I better start trying to figure out how to do it. That's how it kind of kicked in. So
you graduated college, and then you said, I'm going to go and give it a shot. Which again, that's a huge, you know, growing up on Long Island, and as I did, and. So many, most people, you know, they graduate college, they go out, they're ready to get a job, and you say, you know what, I'm going to fulfill my dream. It's just unbelievable, you know, it's just a great story.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was
it doesn't happen.
It's a tough road, you know, I mean, and I started doing stand-up, and as your uncle can tell you, who came to one of my shows in New York, he came right up after, and he said, you better find a job, buddy. But, you know, I went out there and...
that must have been fear. I mean, isn't it fearful cause to stand up there? They're not
stand
laughing.
Stand-up is a tough thing, and I got into it because I used to go to all these stand-up shows, and I used to tell everybody, this guy sucks. And one of my friends signed me up for some amateur night. They said, all right, enough talking. Let's see how good you are. So there's nothing more terrifying than stand-up comedy. You have just you, a microphone, and an audience, and you have no way to hide behind anything. So if you're not getting laughs, you have nobody to blame but yourself. So it's tough, but when it works, it's one of the biggest rushes in the world.
It's just gratifying.
Yeah,
to people.
Yeah.
And where were you successful as a stand-up comic, or you?
I mean, I did it for a couple of years as an amateur. I was successful in that. I think it worked, you know. But it got me money for my first short film, like The President of New Line. I was working at New Line Cinema. Came down, gave me some money, and then I went to the American Film Institute. So I only did it for a couple of years. I wasn't monetarily successful, but I like to think I was successful because I did well when I was up there. So I kind of wish I stuck with it. It was one of those things that it was a very tough lifestyle, living in, you know, sitting in bars till 3 o'clock in the morning waiting for your shot, but very gratifying when it works.
It's incredible. So you did stand-up comedy, then you got this New Line. The President New Line gave you an opportunity.
Well, he gave me money for a short film I was directing, and I used that film. That film ended up selling to Showtime, and I used that film to get into the American Film Institute to study directing. So I did that, and then when I came out of AFI, I got my first feature film, which was a little tiny piece of garbage movie called Fat Beach.
I stomached through that.
Yeah, you know, and it's still playing on cable. I did that movie, though, for $100,000, which when people talk about independent film, to get a movie for that budget that gets released in theaters, which I never thought it would and never hoped it would, it was a movie I just kind of got hired on to do. But, you know, they released it on 400 screens, and I had to wake up to a New York Times review of Fat Beach.
Not to mention having the premiere and your dad and family and everyone watching Fat Beach.
That was crazy.
I mean, I can imagine.
That premiere was insane because they did a radio giveaway. And honestly, me and my parents, I think, were the only white people in the entire audience. And when they introduced me as the writer and director of this movie, they were just, people were going nuts.
Who are you, Vanilla Ice? They probably thought you were Vanilla Ice.
They really did. But you know what? The movie has grossed almost $10 million over the last 14 years since it came out, and while I'm not proud of what it is, you know, with being 22, making any kind of movie, you know, is something.
No, it was huge. It was and of course. So how did Entourage happen? So then you did Fat Beach, and obviously that was you out now doing a film. And when did you come up with the idea behind Entourage?
Well, Entourage came later, but I did a movie in between that called Kissing a Fool with David Schwimmer from Friends, and that was also an independent movie that Universal picked up and was released pretty widely. And then, you know, wrote a bunch of scripts that didn't get made, wrote a couple of TV pilots that didn't happen. And then just one, you know, my manager, Steve Levinson, also manages Mark, and we know each other for a lot of years, and they were kicking around the idea of Mark and his friends as a show, and they brought it to me to write it. So that's where it started.
I see. Okay. And then you, and so which of the characters were your influence and which were Mark's?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, they're all mine now, but Mark, when it started, of course, Mark was the Vince, but when we tried to cast a guy like Mark, we never found him. So we found someone, Adrian, who's much different than Mark, and the show kind of went in a different direction. But, you know, the other characters, Mark has a friend named Johnny Drama, and Mark has a friend named E, but they're very different. And the characteristics, I kind of have taken the dynamics that me and my three buddies had when we were growing up and made that. And then I kind of take career things that I know from Mark's life, and I use that. So it's all just a mishmash, but...
Well, let's talk about Ari. Was your agent in Hollywood someone like Ari?
My agent in Hollywood is Ari. So.
Oh, it is Ari.
Yeah, Ari.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a real Ari who was not my agent when the show started, but I knew him and he sold the show because he was Mark Wahlberg's agent, and he's a very dynamic, interesting character. And combining that with Jeremy Piven's acting abilities, we came up with something pretty great.
Yeah, it's incredible. Because your personality is so unlike any of these characters, it seems.
Well, I mean, I think I'm kind of the Eric character of the group, you know, if I had to put myself closest to anybody. But, you know, I put a lot of him into that. He's kind of the moral center of the show, and he's kind of the guy trying to keep everybody straight.
Right.
But there's different pieces of me in everybody, including Ari, and, you know.
Very cool. So we have someone calling in. We'll take a question, or, you know,
sure.
People calling in. Okay, great. Let's see. 219, you're on Blog Talk Radio with Doug Ellen.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Levy and Mr. Ellen. My name is Alan Roger Curry. I'm a book author from the Chicagoland region, and I'm a big fan of this venue, Blog Talk Radio, as well as the host myself, and, of course, I'm a huge fan of Entourage. Mr. Ellen, I was fortunate enough to briefly make your acquaintance at last year's Season 3 premiere party.
Oh, yeah.
At the Social Hollywood. As a matter of fact, I took a picture with you, and I lied to all my friends that me and you have known each other for years, and we're buddies. And I just want to quickly congratulate you on the completion of another successful season.
Oh, thanks
so
much.
And the beginning of a new season. And one or two quick questions. In your interview with Deborah Solomon in the New York Times Magazine a few days ago, you said that the show Entourage was 100% scripted reality.
Mm-hmm.
And for me watching the show, I would say most of what I've seen has been fairly accurate. I've worked in the entertainment industry, although not on the highest levels of the fast lane. But one thing I did want to ask you, when you have a storyline such as Vince putting up his house for sale to purchase a script and or finance a movie, Is that a normal occurrence in today's Hollywood?
No, that's definitely, while still extremely real, that's a little, you know, that's coming from stuff that I've done. I mean, Mark has never put up his own house to finance a movie, but there are actors that have done it, and there are filmmakers who have done it, and I, you know, put everything I had into my first short film. Robert Rodriguez sold blood so he can make his first movie. And it's, you know, it's a realistic look at a certain type of person. It's not taken from Mark directly, but that type of stuff happens all the time where people go in and finance their own movie. And some people are questioning the accuracy of the $5 million. But when a movie's in development, as long as that one is, and when it gets going into production, costs get put against it, production costs and building sets and stuff, and then you can make an offer for less than possibly what they've put into it and get it. So, but it is pretty accurate, and no one in Hollywood has thought anything that, wow, what are they doing here? So, yeah, we feel pretty strongly about that.
Mm-hmm. One other question. One of the things I love about the show is that you very rarely have ever have any what I would call corny, sappy, melodramatic love storylines. And, you know, all the guys seem really, from, you know, my experience in life, I mean, for example, that Kevin Connolly's character of E, he doesn't seem to pursue casual sex as much as, say, Turtle and Drama.
Yeah.
And Vince, casual sex seems to actually pursue him more so than vice versa.
Absolutely, yeah.
But do you ever, does the producing staff or writing staff ever receive any, like, I guess, pressure from any feminist groups or simply female fans that desire more of that kind of corny, melodramatic love story?
Well, I've never gotten that kind of thing that they wanted more of a corny story, but I have gotten a lot of this show's very misogynistic and this and that, and exactly what you kind of point to me makes it not. I mean, Eric, you never hear Eric saying a bad word about a girl, or Vince, and Turtle and Drama are kind of the losers that can't get the girls. So no matter what they say to me, you know, it really doesn't hold true to those statements, but you know, to me, these guys are really good guys, and they're not predators. And if anything, I've toned down for young guys in Hollywood to how they pursue women. So I try to just take it from my perspective of what the lifestyle I perceive to be and how I've seen it, as opposed to trying to make any particular group happy. But I've gotten some comments that the show's misogynistic. But most people, I think, take it for what it is, which is a realistic portrayal of young men in Hollywood. And, you know, as I say, I think at the end of the day, these guys have good hearts. And if they found the right girl, which Eric has a couple of times during the course of the show, they would be more than willing to settle down with that.
Alan, thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Have a good day. How much of the writing do you personally do? I mean, and how big is the writing team on your show?
We've basically got three or four of us doing 90% of it. I write probably 90% of everything. Hold on one second. I've got my 5-year-old jumping into the room.
Okay.
Live on the radio. Please, Luke, not right now.
We're on with on live radio, blogtalkradio.com. With Doug Allen, the creator of Entourage, someone I've known my whole life, and actually not my whole life because I'm older than he is. So, but he's known me his whole life. Part of it probably he didn't know anybody, I guess, the first 2 years. But who's now taking care of his 5-year-old as they're running into the house. So what about season 4 that's happening? I mean, have you got any previews that you've been talking about and kind of direction where the show's going, or what kind of objectives you're looking to hit in season 4?
Well, I mean, we're basically, season 4 is essentially finished. It'll start airing Sunday night, so hopefully we've hit all our objectives. But we had, you know, I really wanted to show Vince acting this year. I really wanted to show him on a set, show this guy some talent, and we're going to see him this Sunday night, you know, playing Pablo Escobar, speaking in Spanish, and putting on 50 pounds, and I think doing it believably well, more so than any actor I can imagine on television doing. So
really?
Yeah, I think this episode we have coming up Sunday night is something pretty special, and, you know, it's very different than anything we've done before, and I think it's one of our best episodes. And
why is it so different?
Well, because we do it as a documentary. It's kind of a homage to Hearts of Darkness, which was the making of Apocalypse Now, and it's a documentary style. And these guys are on the set, and we are doing big explosions and special effects and makeup and all sorts of things that are just different. And seeing these guys outside of L.A., seeing them in Colombia, it's going to be pretty interesting what people think.
Right, right. And, of course, the premiere is on Thursday night. Well, the premiere for the public's on Sunday.
Sunday night, yeah.
You have Thursday night is the you're going to show it as well.
Yeah, so Sunday night we're going to show Thursday night we're going to show the first two, have a big party in New York City, and that'll be fun.
So, you know, it's such a successful show, and, you know, one of the, you know, when I was with you on Saturday, a few people, you know, people come up, how do you deal with fame now? I mean, it's, you know, people coming up to you, you know, hi, you know, I'm this so-and-so, and
yeah.
How does it change your life?
I mean, my life hasn't changed. Again, like I said, I'm kind of the Eric character, and not much of it phases me, but I'm in the Hamptons, I was with my parents, and someone recognized me, which is bizarre. Yeah, with my parents, someone's like, I love the show. And my parents don't even understand how anybody's recognizing me. But for me, it doesn't happen that often, but it's interesting when it does. mostly people want to see the guys, obviously, understandably so. But nothing's really changed for me. I got a couple extra bucks in my pocket. That's about it.
Right. I know. I think it's great. I think it's like a level-headed view towards life, you know, very much into your family and your friends still. And you live in Hollywood and fantasy land, and you've had so much success. But it's interesting. I spoke to some – when we were talking to a couple of kids, I think, someone, you know, say, I love Entourage. The first question is, how old are you?
Right.
You were interested in the demographic, right? Is that
I was really asking that because I didn't want. I don't think 13-year-olds should be watching the show. I thought the kid was like 13 or 14. That was the only why. I'm not interested in the demographics, really. I mean, I think I know we have a bizarrely wide demographic from young to old, and I think the show's kind of hitting everywhere in between. So, which is interesting. But I don't worry about stuff like that. And, you know, for me, again, I do my work. I do it the best I can. But my best friends are still my friends from sixth grade on, who I speak to weekly, who will all be at my premiere on Thursday night, you know. So I try to just take care of my kids. You know?
Right. Okay. No, because I was talking to a kid on Sunday night. I said, Doug Allen's going to be on my show. I said, Doug Allen, oh, my, I love that show. I mean, it's my favorite show, 13.
Cool. Well, that's cool.
it's kind of
glad we're influencing the 13-year-olds.
Yeah.
Their parents should not be letting them.
No, I know. Well, would you? I mean, I saw a quote in the Times. What was the quote? Were you happy with that quote? They said, would you want your kids or something? If any of your
kids...
Yeah,
I mean, it was whether I would, how I would feel if my kids had the values of the guys on Entourage.
Right.
You know, I'm hoping my kids don't want to be in Hollywood and they have no desire to be famous and they just, you know, want to do good work. So,
but why not?
It's just a vacant, empty lifestyle. I mean, there's some people who can do it well and try to keep themselves out of the whole thing, but it's also a very tough thing. I mean, I've been kicking around for 17 years, and there's been ups and downs, and as recently as, you know, 8 years ago, I thought I was going back to law school. So, you know, it's a tough town, and it's not, until you really feel the success, it's not a very rewarding town, so... Hopefully they'll find something that makes them happy that's a little easier is my hope. But.
Right. And you, of course, didn't sleep your way to the top.
Yeah, exactly. While I love the guys on the show, when my son's 28, 29, I hope he's not living with four other guys, living like frat brothers. But
Right.
I still enjoy watching it. But, you know, it's a different time. Would I let my kids watch at 13? I hope not. I don't know. It's weird because I think my parents weren't letting me watch Three's Company at 13, and they were like three virgins living in a house together, you know. And I remember like trying to watch it from the upstairs, you know, upstairs down to the TV, looking over them because they wouldn't let me watch it. So,
well, you know, there are certain influences of your mom and dad, I guess, in the show, right? The accountant.
Oh yeah, Marvin. You know, my
Marvin, father, the accountant,
yeah,
who I work for, by the way. I still never forget. I took this big job in New York City with. Your dad, I thought I was going to learn all these great things about accounting, and I was out there to get him tuxedo shirts and theater tickets.
I worked there also.
And I didn't do a good job at that, by the way.
Yeah,
I got
worked
fired.
There also. They thought I was retarded. I used to sit there and be like, I don't understand how these people can do this all day and all night. But
yeah, I think you and I were the two people that were actually almost kicked out of the office by the office manager.
Yeah, well, we got him back. We're doing it right now.
Exactly, we got him
back.
Yeah,
Marvin, Paulie Herman plays Marvin the accountant on the show. He'll actually be on in 2 weeks. He's been on a couple times before.
Yes.
And that's based on, you know, Marvin the accountant in my life, so. So.
Yeah, I know. I noticed that. And is his name Marvin on the show?
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
And get into another area now that I know that there's some people interested in talking about, and you have this another project that you're working on, a project about hedge funds. It was, I guess, referenced in this past Sunday's New York Times.
Yeah. I mean, it's at the very early stages. We don't even have a script yet, but we're hoping to, by next summer, have another show, kind of an East Coast, more adult version of Entourage in certain ways. Guys making... you know, extreme amounts of money and living a different lifestyle. But that'll be a much more mature show with marriages and stuff like that and kids and all those kind of things.
Another one kind of geared towards like an HBO type?
Yeah, yeah.
Series.
It's for HBO, and if all goes well, it'll be on after Entourage next summer, we hope.
Right, okay. And, I mean, is there any... big story. I mean, obviously, the hedge fund business is enormous. The amount of wealth that's being created is is just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what's appealing to you about it? Is
it dynamic,
or you're exposed to it in certain ways?
Yeah, I'm exposed to it in certain ways, and, you know, I've done certain things on Entourage with the guy coming in from, you know, from Stamps.com who made $60 million, you know, in a year. And I think, you know, the money that Vince makes, you know, the money that Mark Wahlberg makes is nothing compared to what these guys are making, you know, who are making $1 billion at 40 years old, 42 years old, a year,
yeah,
every year. So we want to just try to explore that world that I think people are kind of fascinated by now and try to find the humanity in it, if that's possible.
Now, do you take on certain individuals to help you explore this world? I mean, this obviously have to do research, and there's some public disclosure, but obviously there's not a lot of public disclosure.
Yeah, but again, like Entourage, it's going to be character based. It's going to be more than dealing with Wall Street. It's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be just we're on the floor or we're on, you know, in their trading desks or whatever it is. It's going to be basically behind the scenes, living the lives of these guys outside of their world. Like Entourage, I mean, this year is the first year we've seen Vince on a set. So I don't know how many times we'll see them in their offices or not, but again, it's such early stages of development that I'm not sure. I find it fascinating because I see these guys I went to college with who are making so much money. They own 12 homes, they have planes, they have choppers, they have all this, and it's kind of beyond fantasy land. So that's where the initial impetus for the idea came from. So we'll see where it goes.
Right. It's interesting. I mean, while, you know, many people relate to the characters on Entourage in terms of particularly Turtle and Drama, and they can't get the girl or they struggle as they have these faults and personality faults and so on, a lot of people may not identify as closely with, you know, these billionaires.
It is always finding ways into a character to make them either relatable or identifiable or whatever it is. I mean, people watch Dynasty not because they live that lifestyle, but it was a soapy fantasy world. And this will, you know, this will combine elements not of soapiness, but will show a world that people are not normally privileged to, but nonetheless will find fascinating. And I think when you see, which is what I really try to do with Vince, and these guys, they're just regular guys. And I think when people watch Vince, it's like, that's my friend from high school. And I think, you know, when you strip away celebrity, what people find are interesting, and I know when my high school friends meet my celebrity friends, they're always repetitive in, wow, he's just a regular guy. He's just a regular guy.
Right.
And I think what's interesting is to see a guy who made $1.7 billion last year, that he's just a regular guy. He's no different than anybody else. He just happens to do something well. And what are those, you know, astronomical numbers mean to his lifestyle behind the scenes? And, you know, it's a tricky world to find a way into, though, like you say, relatability and likability and all that, but that was the very same challenge on Entourage, because why do people care whether Vincent Chase gets $5 million or $12 million for a movie, you know? And we've found a way to do that because people like him and hope he succeeds, so.
Well, look, people want to know how much Roger Clemens is. I mean, they're infatuated with how much Clemens gets or
yep.
How much any of these, you know, how much are the Knicks paying, you know, Allen Houston for 10 years? And, you know,
well, that's all you read about anymore. I mean, it's everything, every paper, every day you're reading about the athletes and the hedge fund managers. And that's what's really scary about it. When A-Rod signed his contract, it was the craziest thing in the world. And now you read about these hedge fund guys making $1.7 billion in a year.
Yeah.
And you go, wow, A-Rod would have to play baseball for the next 500 years to make what this guy makes in a year.
Right.
You know?
Well, maybe there'll be a cycle in that show, and if it goes long enough, where there's a down cycle, where this hedge fund bubble, this 8,000, you know, there's 8,000
right.
hedge funds, and many of them are young guys that have never seen a bear market. And,
right.
You know, and that may be down the path, and that would be probably a decent, that would get... You know, that'd be a decent angle to go with there.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, a really rough market where these guys, like, you know, have extended themselves to, you know, it's interesting.
Yep.
And I also think one other thing about a lot of these guys, and I know many of them, you know, in my circles, great family people.
Yep.
They really care. I mean, they really
yep.
want to spend that time
I mean,
with their
you've
kids.
Got every type, and again, it's like any other world, and it's why I always say with Entourage, you know, they could be firefighters, they could be insurance salesmen. At the end of the day, they're four good friends. One's a little better looking, one's a little uglier, one's a little funnier, whatever it is, you know. And it's the same thing with this world. I mean, you know, you have a hedge fund guy and you have a guy making $200 million and his good friend makes $280,000, you know, and they still kind of hang out together. And it's a fascinating world. And when I see these guys that I went to school with, I am fascinated by them because they have no worries except for to stay healthy anymore. That's like the biggest problem in their life is not to die, because they never have to think about money again. And we'll see how we can find interesting ways to tell stories about them.
Great. Well, we're looking forward to that, and hopefully, and then we'll see that next year on HBO, which is great. And now with The Sopranos gone, you're really probably going to be the lead show. I mean, how does that feel?
Well, I mean, I don't look at it like that, especially since we're a half hour. You know, most half hours need another half hour to complement them. They need a block. You know, it's one thing to sit down. It's one thing to rush home and watch an hour show or an hour and a half when you have a drama like we had Sopranos, then Us. It's tough to run home and just for a half hour. So we're hoping, you know, Flight of the Conchords is coming on this Sunday night. We're hoping HBO's got some other good stuff in store.
Definitely. Well, listen, it's been a pleasure having you on, and I appreciate you joining me. You have been listening to Doug Allen, and again, you know, I've known you so long, and I'm proud of you, certainly, in your accomplishments and the fact that we saw each other last time, on Saturday. I hadn't seen you in about 10, 15 years. I don't know. But I hope we can see each other again soon.
Absolutely.
And I'd love to get the guys on, if we could, at some point, and have, like, a panel and talk, you know.
Yeah,
this
cool.
is a great platform to do
okay.
that.
Yeah, that'll be cool. So, awesome having me on. Thanks very much, and I will talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right,
well.
Take
Thank
care.
You. I appreciate it. That was Doug Allen on the Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio. Doug's really grounded, as you could tell. He's a great guy. He's very much focused on, real life stories, and that's the appeal, I think, of Entourage. I mean, it's got the glitz. It's in L.A., but the characters are really identifiable. And all I can say is, this, you know, really down to earth person. A lot of this fame has not gone to his head, and probably all those nights in the comedy clubs up till 3 in the morning, trying to telling some jokes and not getting them all, you know, done well. But, you know, he's a great guy, and thank you for listening to today. I appreciate it. You've listened to The Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio. Have a good day.